I'm Aaron Gallo.
I'm Marty Hogan.
And I'm Eric Berry.
And we're from the Starfleet Escape Podcast. And you're listening to another great 4Eyed Radio product. For more shows, check out 4EyedRadio.com.
Hey there, Eric here from Socially Awkward Studios, and this 4Eyed Radio presentation is being proudly brought to you by Raven Designs, illustration and design that fit your personality. For samples and inquiries, visit ravencruise.com.
You have been listening to the Ranger Command Power Hour at the 4Eyed Radio Network. Ranger Command Power Hour is a gas.
Hey Ranger Nation, Trekkie B47 here. Today's episode is completely uncensored and may contain language unsuitable for minors. We had the pleasure of interviewing Kerrigan Mahan once again. He is known for his roles as Goldar in Mighty Morphin Power Rangers through Power Rangers in Space, the Magna Defender in Power Rangers Lost Galaxy, and Jeb the Talking Dog in VR Troopers, as well as numerous monster voices throughout the franchises. This is episode 23, Ranger Command Post Power Morphicon Wrap-Up Part Goldar, recorded on September 20th, 2014, and features myself, as well as Zach, also known as the Cinema Slob. Enjoy.
Bad about the Lockseed scenario.
Yeah, let's not repeat that.
Yeah, that's why I'm like clearing my desk off entirely.
Oh my god!
Hi. There he is!
Melanie! It's Eric! Eric called from Ranger. Honey, get down here! Wake up, honey!
Hello.
We meet again.
Yep, we do meet again.
I'm very busy. Certain parties are going to have to be killed. this mess they called Morphicon. No, we're not going there. It was fun. I went ahead and had my third fucking espresso just because I thought, why not? We know we're doing it alone.
I had to hit the caffeine today too. I was up until 5 editing the episode that just released today.
That's brutal.
Yeah, so as soon as I edited it, I uploaded it, I crashed, I woke up at 10:30 and I'm like, I need some coffee, and usually I'm not a coffee drinker.
Oh, I am. 2 full mugs on the espresso machine that's the Starbucks, the old Starbucks. Now they don't have it anymore. The machine was always made by this company, and it had the Starbucks name on it. Great machine, real workhorse.
Yeah.
They sold it for $3.99, and then at Christmas they'd sell it for $2.99. I've gone through 3 of the machines. They last a long time, but I'm really stating more how long I've been drinking coffee.
Right? I bet you need a lot of coffee at Morphicon.
I do. And probably a lot more liquor at 5.
Well, that's why your sister was like, yeah, if you have him on after 5, it's Kerrigan Uncensored.
God. Isn't that awful to have that kind of a reputation? Wow. Well, yeah. Did you get to record what I just did, the funny stuff?
Oh, yeah. I hit broadcast before you even got on because I knew you would bust That's in. Cool.
I just shot I had to shoot what was virtually a commercial, but it's really a commercial for these people's website.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they've never been in front of a camera before. And I was dealing with extras and all kinds of shit. I fucking totally just lost my point right there. Gone. No idea why I even brought that up. There's a reason I brought it up, but you're never going to know it because it just left my
head. It sure remained a mystery.
It was a brutal shoot, but I had a point, specific point regarding something to do with all of this, and I've lost it. So, damn.
It's fine. No,
it's not fine. It's not fucking fine. It's getting old, and I don't like it. You know what I want?
What's that?
I talked to my friend Richard Epcar. I don't know if you know Richard. Well, we go back 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to probably want to cut a lot of this stuff. But I found myself kind of sitting here going, I want a big game. I want to do a nasty, bitching, off the fucking charts game and do a character that's just a mean, nasty, scary motherfucker. I want something fresh. I have, you know, I IPO all the time up in my little booth, all kinds. I just knocked something out for a producer friend the other day, literally the other day. But, mm-hmm. you know, outside of going down to L.A. to do Linda LaMontagu's Family Guy, which I don't do much of, you know, she was just hacked. I got an email, one of those emails that you know somebody's, you know, it's like, hi, how are you? It's like, I took a screenshot and I sent it over to her saying, Linda, you got hacked again. You might want to take a look at the screenshot. And by the way, I'd love to do a gig. but, you know, when I moved to Morro Bay, I don't regret this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here 11 years. I've had a lovely, lovely life of getting to park, you know, in front of the town movie theater to see a movie. I mean, you're so spoiled. And every time I go down, like that trip I made down, how long I had the big, huge, all the Power Rangers put together movies, all the DVDs, that big set.
Oh, the Shout Factory set.
Right? Yeah, the Shout Factory.
Yeah, last year. Yeah. I don't know when they record the interviews, but yeah, it was released. They
recorded the interviews I'd say nearly a year prior.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It took some time for that to get out.
And that was with Brian Ward from Shout Factory and all of that?
Yes.
Okay.
That's who it was with. And I'm just making comment regarding the LA traffic that I, you know, I mean, I go back to the days where you could take San Diego freeway anywhere you wanted at any time of the day. Anytime it went, but that's going way back. Now we're into the, you know, late 60s, mm-hmm. early 70s. And then it reached a point where, okay, those of us that know the ropes, there are shortcuts. There were great shortcuts. Hauser was a cut through, and all these little shortcuts worked. More along the way, they stopped working to the degree that cops were even posted in neighborhoods going, don't think you're cutting through here for work.
Oh, jeez.
And they were giving you tickets. They were giving, you know, if it posted basically, do you live here? And you're written a ticket. This trip to do that interview, the same old time I always do. So, you know, I've been back and forth to L.A. in 10, 11 years I've been in Morro Bay. I've probably been down there, I'd say 50 times every time for work. Never once have I gone down for a wedding or a funeral, which I'm it's awful that I didn't go down for a couple of funerals. I mean, people that really were responsible for my career, Carl Masek being, you know, really the guy that put me, boom. But I don't do funerals. I don't like them. Mm-hmm. I just don't do it. I don't like weddings. I steer clear of weddings at all costs. I don't think they're fun. And I especially don't think it's fun when I sit down with 8 fucking strangers going, so, how do you know the groom? Hi, what do you do?
I'm an electrician. Great, you're an electrician.
I'm in real estate. Okay, all right. I like hanging with my own if I'm going to hang at all, and I probably am more a loner than I ever completely realized, and I look back at all the sports through the years.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't find me playing no baseball or football, or I'm on the tennis court. I'm body surfing. I'm riding a mountain bike. These are kind of alone sports.
No teams. No other people.
And my dad, God love him, may he rest in peace. We had a, as most, I think most father-sons do, we had a, not a distant, but a sordid relationship, respectful of, this is typical father-son shit. And I got a lot of mixed signals growing up. You know, I'd do a play, and of course, you know, the rehearsals leading up to the play, I'm the greatest thing since sliced bread, and then the play is beautiful, man, this kid, you got best fucking, this kid can act his fucking ass off. Play closes. Jesus Christ, you have no idea what you're up against. They'll chew you up and spit you out. I'm like, okay, interesting that I wound up acting in the dark. I mean, that's quite an interesting metaphor when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
My career was, for the most part, not to suggest that I didn't do my fair share of on-camera. I did. But I realized in shooting, and I'll be very honest, which is my biggest problem in this town, in shooting these Goldar and Me's, they're very anxiety-ridden. You know, on-camera acting was nothing I really realized in shooting these vignettes, how much I didn't care for it in the day when I was doing it.
Right. But looking back, you don't have any regrets, right?
No, I don't. I mean, I really don't have any regrets because I realize, I guess what I'm trying to say is, I realize how much anxiety there is and was in on-camera acting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, the opposite of no, I mean, so no regrets that I didn't continue pounding down that on-camera road because every time I did an on-camera job, the anxiety for me was horrible. Memorizing lines, I mean, I did it when I did plays, but you had 6-7 weeks.
Right, right.
You know, it's a whole different animal, and you're slowly memorizing, you're slowly getting off book, what they call with no script. And sure, I mean, my God, opening night was, I don't relish opening night on anyone. I mean, half the actors, I think I may have even told this story before, half of all actors that do stage do throw up prior to their opening night entrance. I was right on the cusp. My solar plexus were just like, oh, God, why did I do this? This is so sick. But, you know, once you hit that stage, and we just did a dress rehearsal the night before, and it went, you know, problems, but usually, you know, a bad dress makes for a great opening, as they say. Right. Not really always the case. And now, you know, I've had my horrifically tense moments on stage, certainly throughout the years I did it, but much prefer it to on camera. It's just more organic. Yeah. And that's what's so cool about voiceover is, sure, you do another take on camera if it didn't work. But what people don't realize is once the master has been shot, the big shot, whatever choices you made physically on those very lines, if you're doing this with your hands on these lines, well, when you come around over the shoulder for the other guy's shot, you got to be doing this the same way. All that matching. And it's tedious because, you know, you're getting a script in some cases the night before, 2 days before, and you're memorizing some chunk of coroner dialogue, and 6 a.m. in the morning they hand you pink sheets and they've changed your that you spent all night trying to get it memorized. I mean, anyway, my point is I have fun doing the Goldar and Me's. I do. And the last one I had a ball. This one was a speech I know like the back of my hand since my days in New York in my 20s, early 20s, and I never got to do it. It was just a speech that's been rumbling around in my head for 35 years. So for that one, no problem with the lines. I knew them like the back of my hand. I can say the speech at 1,000 miles an hour. So that was easy from the standpoint of knowing the words.
But it's doing the motions over and over, and it just adds another layer of memorization to it.
Exactly. It's a whole element that people have no idea exists.
Mm-hmm.
And the only person on a set that is allowed to virtually say cut, it's an unspoken rule, is the continuity girl. She's sitting there with a mapped out book on a little stool, and it's quite the job. And you look at this graph that I don't really know how it works, but she's watching everything. And she can literally tap the director and give a mm-mm. And director actually says, cut. Okay, when he took the drag of the cigarette, he was, and she has a script right there, he was right here on this line, and that's where he took it. Now he's taking it over here. So basically the actor is standing there looking like an idiot because he is not matching himself. And then oftentimes you'll see a bad cut on a TV show. And, you know, my dad was a film editor.
Yeah.
Which gives me a little, you know, one up on shooting these things. I know a little something about all of this. I mean, I grew up with a moviola, you know, in a converted garage into the office. And, you know, they made a whole movie in there. But it's just tedious. That's all. It's more tedious than people realize. Like that scene in, what was that wonderful film where all the wonderful actors were in it? Meryl Streep and her last film, actually. Julia Roberts, you know, I can't name them all. Anyway, there's a big scene. When you see those big scenes at a table with like 10, 12 name actors, Deer Hunter is a good example.
Right.
Great example. Same thing. All they're all sitting at that table.
Yeah.
People don't realize that there's probably about 40 setups, 40 separate setups. All the different angles. In some cases, they'll two cameras, but two cameras still isn't say, oh, the party's over. We got those two angles. We got a lot more to cover. And they're all going through that scene, the same scene from the top to the end on every angle. Now, angles are not takes.
So you have takes in those angles as well.
Yeah, I got 40. If I got 40 setups with a table of 12 major actors, which is not exaggeration, and nobody's running off to do an interview or talk on a picture of that magnitude. They're all hanging for each other.
Yeah.
I mean, in an emergency, it's like Meryl has to do this interview. So she's going to not be there for this round on this angle. So, okay, that's fine. But for the most part, everybody will be there. So you've got 40 setups on a shot, on a shoot like that. In some cases, two cameras. So what? So it's still 40 setups. Now we got, within those 40 setups, we got times, I think it's fair to say, 3 to 4 takes.
God. Now
you've done the scene 100 to 200 times. Plus, that scene is going to go all day. We're not getting that in before lunch. That'll be all morning. We'll go to lunch. We'll come back, and we'll probably finish it up about 2.5 hours after lunch.
Oh, my God.
See, this is what people don't understand, you know? And they walk. They so easily critique, I guess, which is fair.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have any idea how many layers go into these things. You know, that's just the photography. And the sound is a whole nother animal, and the music and the mix. And that's why after you see the end of a film, you see all those credits. It's like it's a lot of work. I'm rambling because the Gold RMEs are way more work than people have any idea, I think.
Well, it's probably not anywhere near like a podcast, but I can understand on some small level because, you know, I'm adding music tracks, I'm editing people's speeches out, adding effects, all that kind of stuff. And I may have 5 or 6 audio layers I'm working with.
Absolutely.
So I can only imagine the scale of a TV show or a movie or even a short like Gold Army.
Well, they're all varying, but you understand enough to realize that how much is involved with the audio. And the audio department in film is or TV or whatever is completely separate from picture.
Right.
I mean, these are two departments that have multiple layers within the departments that then combine together, which is nothing to do with the music department, which is separate.
Right.
You know, and so all of these have to come together and have to, and it really, when a movie really works, it's kind of a miracle that you could really bring all this together and you pull our heartstrings and made us cry or made us laugh like this. I think it's one of the most impressive arts in our civilization, all of civilization. I think movie making is a trip. because it can be so fabulous and it can be so deadly bad. And it takes just as much work to make a bad movie. That's
right. So I think going back to what you said of wanting a juicy role.
Yeah.
For voice acting, when was the last time you did something in anime?
Oh boy, I haven't done any anime in many, many, many years. I think I got it. Oh, what was that? Ooh, geez. Is it even on my bio? I didn't do any Pokemon.
That would have been epic to hear like a Dark Goldar voice on Pokemon.
I can see the studio. I'm going to say it was probably 5 years. I'm sorry to say I can't think of the name of it. I know the fans know it. And it went from very big eye, getting on like that. You know, Mike, making horror of this. Mike should have done it. I was just imitating Rickard. I did it in one. It was big. Lot of cues. Seems to me I took the train down. One of the only times I took the train down, the director picked me up at Burbank Airport, which is where the train stop is. We rolled over to, I can see the studio, I can't say the name of it, in Burbank, and I knocked the whole roll out in, I think, 3 hours, caught the train right back up the line. And it was like, I'm talking without exaggeration, I think I knocked out about 130 cues in 3 hours. I was one of the, I'm not bragging, but I am bragging. Greg Snetoff and I were the two fastest dubbers in the business. And we held the record at Intersound. Once he was ahead of me at 56, I think 56 loops in an hour. And I beat him out. I know I beat him out at 58. I think I still hold that record, but I don't think anybody cares.
We care. Wow, I think you need to get back into some anime, sir, because anime has just taken off in the past 10 years, even more now than ever. And studios like Funimation, you know, they're one of the big players now, but there's so many great anime shows out there with these rich villains. And I don't know, I think it would be a great...
Well, here's the deal with the anime. I mean, I spearheaded the contract and actually got the contract with Mike McConaughey, Steve Kramer. I think Snagoff and I were the force to get an anime contract with Screen Actors Guild. There was no contract. And we're talking probably the early 90s. We got a contract. When I started anime, it was paying $13 an hour for what we called bits and walla, and $15 an hour if you had a role, you were playing a character. And then I can remember it going 15 and 17, and it went up then to 20. And I'm 28 years old at the time, and coming off of doing stage plays for community theater, basically. Little theater for nothing. You're not getting paid anything. And yeah, tending bar and waiting tables. That was the reality. It was like I was still pursuing an on-camera career, as was Bryan Cranston, who you might recall. Right. I said, enough with the bullshit, Bryan. It's over, buddy. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Bryan Cranston did a couple villains on Power Rangers that first season.
Absolutely. I mean, he did all kinds of things on and off. We crossed paths many times. We were supposed to make a movie together. Bob Barron, who was our director in the day, who has since died a long time ago, 10 years ago, I think. And we were going to shoot this little picture out in the desert with Robert directing. And you might recall an actor by the name of Dan Shore. Dan, he was kind of hot, and I was not at all, but Aaron liked me, and Brian was going to be in it too. And I'm embarrassed to say this. And of course, if this gets out, it's met with the utmost respect for Bryan Cranston. I think he's awesome. At the time, I said, why are we using Brian? He's so boring. Yeah, buddy.
Yeah, buddy.
anime for a second,
and then
I'll close it. I hate to go down this road, but I have to because we have to address it. Unfortunately, there's the money. The money is not good. I mean, falling down to L.A., I can't do it here. They haven't figured out how I can, you know, if I could direct and do it from my house, that would change the price of butter.
Right.
I mean, again, it sounds like a great hourly. I think they're getting $75 an hour with, I think, a 2-hour minimum. But you're pounding line after line after line after line by yourself. So, yeah, I mean, if there was a really cool character that I could go. But see, I mean, again, the turnaround for me, it's just there's not enough. Whereas the gaming, there is good money.
Now, you did some work on the Halo franchise, right?
You know, I think I did some early gaming when I didn't really know what is this? There was one I did. I remember it like went all over the world in parts or something, and each one it was like some kind of a mystery that each part of the world or I can't remember how it worked, but I know I was a part of one of these early games. I think I have, and I see a couple other actually on my IMDb that I go.
You're like, I don't remember that.
I mean, I got the biggest residual I ever got in my life for Ultimate Avengers. I don't recall doing anything on Ultimate. I couldn't tell you where I was, who I played, what it is, and I've yet to rent it.
Even on your IMDb, it just says Ultimate Avengers voice. Like, there's no additional, character.
Additional voices.
Yeah, oh, okay.
And I got one guy that I've known for years. I can't remember who was on it. And, you know, I get residuals probably – again, this is because of all of the looping. I mean, I looped probably without exaggeration. I'm going to say between TV shows and movies, counting each episode, meaning I've got a TV show I do every week. So count, meaning an episode counts as one, second episode counts as two. I have done over 2,000 TV shows and movies on the looping stage. Yeah. That's stuff people don't know anything about.
I don't know what.
That's all uncredited. I mean, I've done that guy that's going through the hotel, the Japanese man who's carrying on with all the people following him. And I'm like, and, you know, they say, Care, can you make that work? What's he doing? Why is he in the shot? What's he carrying on about with all of these people following him through a hotel? I mean, these are extras that the director wasn't paying attention, and the extras director was obviously making his own movie, and there are 10, 12 of us on the stage.
So it's just like looping is more like background voices.
She comes in from the store and she listens to her answer machine. That dates right there, doesn't it? And so she got 3-4 voices that she hears and fast forwards to the next voice. And hey, June, it's Dan. I just wanted to see her. Are we still? Okay, that's us. We cover all that. We cover the tower. Excuse me for that.
No, it's all right.
Jeez, don't people realize I'm doing interviews? We're working here, people. So, yeah, we cover the back. You're very astute, Eric. We cover all the background, but we also cover a lot of specifics. We'll also do voice matching where the actor isn't available. Can anybody match so-and-so? Yeah, I got him. And we're going to do an off-camera line to fill in a gap that was clumsy.
And a lot of that goes uncredited?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the loop group coordinator gets a credit. You'll notice in the credits next time you all go to a movie and you'll see loop group coordinator. Barbara Harris, Lee French, Wendy Hoffman, Joyce Kurtz, my ex, Joyce's voices. That's the loop group coordinator. She's the one, he's the one that got the gig that the director likes to use this group. And some groups are, like Barbara Harris, makes it very clear you will not work for any other group. Other groups are a little more loosey-goosey. I was a utility guy pretty much for Lee French for 15 years.
Mm.
and my voice is all over movies from the 90s. Oh, what was the movie with Al Pacino? City of Hope? There's a guy that's on a doctor who's on the jury stand being questioned. And the director he shall remain unnamed. Obviously, anybody can look him up. And there's a library table on the stage pretty much always. And then you've got the stand and the mic coming down for the talent. Usually the library table is right next to it with the ADR editor and or the sound editor.
Mm-hmm.
Projectionist is in the booth. Everything's to screen. There's a big, big screen, right?
Yeah.
So he's sitting at the library table. It's on the other side. And this is how miserable this director is, like this. So my coordinator, Lee French, says, so you want to revoice him? Yeah. Yes. And I'm like, oof. He's got about 14 lines, all sync. Mm-hmm. I got to sync him.
Mm-hmm.
And they're revoicing him because they didn't like him. They didn't like his performance. They didn't like, which is tricky because now you're tied. You're replacing the performance.
But you have to also
you got to sync it. You've got a double task. You have to sync the lips, yet somehow give this guy a better performance when, you know, he might be going, well, I don't know. I wasn't there. I couldn't see anything. What do you want? What do you want me to tell you? Well, I don't know. I didn't see anything. What do you want me to tell you? I don't know. Okay. Let me look at it again. So I methodically go through and knock this guy out. And this became legend all over the looping world. This story I'm sharing with you, this was and probably still is going around to this day. It probably won't tell well. Anyway, Lee says to the guy, I'm finished. And Lee looks at him and says, I should be saying his name. I can never think of his name. God, he was nasty curmudgeon. She goes, so-and-so, do you want to hear it all back in its entirety? And he goes, God, no. And just gets up and leaves. Everybody comes back on the stage, and I just can't help but tell. He's just left. He's gone to lunch or whatever. No. So I told the story to everybody. I said, I finished everything, guys. Lee says, do you want to hear it all back? And he goes, no. God, no. And so that line became kind of infamous, meaning throughout the years, when anybody was asked anything, it became a joke. But people would answer, go, nah, God,
no.
And it wasn't because it was bad performance. I mean, my work was solid, but he just was so done.
This is done with the project.
The whole process. He just didn't want to be there. He's over it. The whole fucking movie. He's seen it so many fucking times. He's just like, Jesus, God.
Wow.
So anime, I probably won't because I can't command the money. It's unfortunate that some of the, you know, as you say, the bigger ones, you know, aren't paying. Let's face it. It's good money. But it's also taxing. It takes a lot of work and energy, and it's a skill that, you know, you don't just waltz in and start doing anime. I mean, I can do it in my sleep. But these days, the thought of having to go in and knock down line after line after line after line after line, I really would sooner be working toward something that's going to pay me more money. And that's where the gaming comes into it, from the standpoint that they're paying, for the most part, those games are paying scale, which... You know, let's face it, $900 a day for sometimes 2 hours. Now we're talking turkey.
Right.
Now I'm driving down to LA.
And video games have come to a point where they're like movies, just in terms of the cinematics and all of the work that goes into it. When you're playing some of these games now, at least when I am, it's like watching a full movie that you're just happen to be guiding the main character on.
Yeah, that's what I'd like. I mean, again, anime, cool. But if I could step over to the studio after I finish doing the game and jump in and do an hour of anime, then you have a 2 hour minimum, sure. Mm-hmm. But I'm not in a financial position, unfortunately. My savings was pretty well wiped out when I built a big fancy contemporary whitewater view house at the very wrong time. And it was brutal. 2007-08.
Oh, yeah, that was bad for housing industry. That was horrible.
Oh, it was brutal. I mean, I was watching things fall apart before my eyes, and I knew my only way out of this at all was to just throw more money at it to make sure it got sold. Because it was jaw-dropping. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I mean, it's just a hard pill to swallow what I was worth. And it's like, oh, God, all I had to do was sell this house I'm speaking to you from and virtually watch the circus from the sidelines. But no, let's go buy that piece of dirt and refi this to the hilt. Oh, geez. So what? You know, would I do it over again differently? Probably. But at the same time, this is my life experience. I'm not complaining. I have no complaints.
So this is what we're calling our Power Morphicon detox month.
Yeah. Yeah. Boxing while I was there.
So was I. Sunday it was like, oh God.
You know, I know there was some problems, and I didn't really feel much of the problems because you know, I think probably the the fans struggled more with some things that weren't working exactly right than I. I mean, I'm in my booth, you know, a monkey in a cage being fed. You know,
a gold monkey.
Gold monkey. I was sorry about the photo op because we weren't scheduled. The photo op thing was a mess. And
yeah,
it wasn't in the, you know, thing. And it's like, geez, if people had really known and seen it clearly at this time, Goldar and Rita, we'd have done better with that. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, 99.9% of all the fans are absolutely wonderful. And then there are a couple of those that I cringe. Just cringe. It's like, oh, God, there he is.
I mean, you get that at any convention. It's like, anywhere.
I mean, that comes with the territory. Though, yeah. You know, come on, guys. I mean, you're dressing up as freaking, come on. That's okay.
Yeah.
Okay, it's great. But I got a little... Well, I did something. We didn't speak about this, actually. I was doing a panel, and I did something I really am careful about. But it was one of those – the panel
– I think we did talk about this. I think I know – yeah.
And I did it. You know, I've seen this guy before, but he's so obnoxious. Look, you. Okay. All of you. If you could be – meet the biggest, baddest villain. Okay. And you're like, I leaned in the mic. I said, I'm sorry I said it. I said, dude, I don't know any villains. I'm playing a villain. I'm an actor playing a villain. I never opened a comic book. Ooh. I mean, I could feel the air sucked out of the whole room, and I went, oh, Kerrigan. Don't do that. But he got under my skin.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, we all are human, and
yeah,
I fucked up. And very, very rarely, I can't count on one hand in my whole career where I...
Is it one of those, like...
villains. We're fucking actors.
it's like one of those William Shatner, like, get a life moments. Like, Saturday Night Live kind of thing. It's like, I'm just a guy. I don't know.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I just had a moment of, I don't like you, and I don't want to play this. I don't want to play... You know, I leaned to the Diva Talks. Yeah, she's pretty.
And Hillary Shepherd?
Yeah, I dropped my head as the mic's coming down. I said, this has got to end. She kind of back at me goes, tell me about it. Because it just was one of those panels that it's like there wasn't a decent question in the whole 45 minutes. Oh. It's like, well, We're which character? Here's another one. Which character in all the episodes would you have liked to play instead of? It's like, you really think we're going home and watching all the fucking shows after we're out of the show?
No.
What the hell are you talking about? I mean, I didn't go there.
Speaking of watching the shows, you didn't watch the original Mighty Morphin until recently, right? When you got the box set?
This is true. What I saw of the show, quite honestly, in 1993, 94, and I guess we went into 95, or maybe even to 96.
Or you played Goldar into In Space, which was 96, 97.
Yeah, right, exactly. Quite frankly, what I saw of the show was what I saw when I recorded the show.
So you saw the Goldar parts and that was
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we were all way too busy with other jobs. I mean, we're driving up as it was. We were driving to Valencia. After the first year, we were jumping around to different studios. They hadn't landed on a studio that, for whatever reasons, they were content with. So studios kept changing. What, we were at one on Ventura Boulevard, then we were over to a place in Burbank called Salome. And then Saban bought that Magic Hollywood Magic whatever studios up there on the other side of the highway from Magic Mountain. And, you know, we were all appalled that we had to drive to Valencia. Somebody has to pick us up. Nobody's picking you up. It was a really quick trip. I mean, it was, you know, a 25-minute drive. Usually I tried to make sure I got scheduled where traffic, and even in those days, there hadn't been yet enough people that had moved out there. I mean, and now it's become an urban sprawl.
Right.
Valencia is, you know, there's all the different places and housing, and God, it's just insane. But
it really is. I used to live in Valencia, and I got to go back there recently, and it was insane how much it had grown.
Oh, my God, yeah. It's insane. You're right. I had a meeting down there maybe 3 years ago, and I didn't even know that the town of – well, I don't know which town it was, but it's a whole town with hotels and stores, and I'm like, holy crap. we just headed up there and recorded, and yeah, that's all I ever saw. And watching it, like I said the last time we spoke, it was a trip. I'll tell you honestly, I think the very first episodes were very weak. I'm stunned that it didn't, and it's nothing to do with me. It's
right.
It's everything. I can never say the title. Evil is the new evil.
Green with evil.
Green with evil, which I think was started with episodes. I never used to ever be able to answer this kind of stuff. Episode 17 to 21 or 2, the five-part Green right. with Evil. As far as I'm concerned, the whole tone, it's just like it really kicked in.
Growing up, like in sixth grade, when I was the new kid and Power Rangers was there in 93, yeah, people were into Power Rangers, but when Green with Evil hit, everyone in my class went absolutely nuts. That was the turning point in the first season of Power Rangers.
I agree with you completely, and I sat here in my living room and watched with my eyes episode one.
The fight with Goldar and Jason, that stands as one of the best, like just the tension, and in that smoke-filled arena, it was intense. That was an intense episode and battle and fight.
It was, and I walked into that not having any idea. Scott wow. said to me, you better gear up, buddy. Like, what do you mean gear up? I haven't done shit in this thing for 16 episodes. He said, you better get your voice straight because you got a lot of work. See, people are mistaken, and I didn't realize this. A lot of the fans think it was all of season one that my voice was a little funky. My voice was funky up through episode 16. Because I wasn't paying any attention. I didn't have much at all through those 16 episodes.
It's just like Sam Briss.
So I was just taking Tony's word for the fact that, and Kerr, you take this gold guy, he doesn't do much.
And then episode 17 hits.
Yeah, yeah. So that's when I went down into my basement. My basement was like 10 by 10. I played drums down there. And I went down there for a good hour and a half, really finding the placement on this voice. And you can hear the difference when episode 17 hits. It's twice as big.
Yeah.
And they never affected my voice. There was no affectation put on it at all.
It's amazing.
And I can still do the voice, no problem.
Oh, yeah. I think that was one of the great videos I saw from Powermorphicon. I wasn't in the area when it happened, but when...
the Shout Factory thing?
No. When Daniel, who was in the Goldar costume, right, when they were up to Austin St. John's booth and he had like the sword up to Austin St. John, and you're in the background because there's this huge crowd. That was awesome.
That was fun. That was crazy. The fans just, I don't know why, and I'm okay, whatever they all choose to do, they'll do, but I don't understand why they would not want me at more of these cons now that Austin's there and I'm doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an activity that I would think it would be well worth it, and it gives the fans a whole another element, if you will.
Yeah.
And then that when we did that Shout thing, when the poor MC, my God, I think he might have been pottying himself. That was last second, how we pulled that off. It was crazy. And Eddie, my dear friend Eddie Frierson, who'd never done these cons before.
When I was at the booth, kind of watching your booth, I got to talk with Eddie for a bit. He's a great guy. I didn't know that was one of his first conventions.
It was his very first. He'd never done one. He might have done he maybe has done a Robotech.
Mm.
I never did a Robotech. I've not done a Robotech. I don't even know if there are Robotech conventions.
Well, at some anime cons, they have like a Robotech kind of event. I don't know if this was more a couple years ago, but I've seen a couple anime conventions have like a big Robotech contingent as part of their convention.
Right. Well, Eddie and I go back to 30 years. You know, I took him to Off-Broadway in his one-man show.
Mm-hmm.
Maddie, an evening with Christy Mathewson, who was the famous turn-of-the-century baseball pitcher for the New York Giants. Holds actually more records, Christy Mathewson, than any other baseball player to date. Truly was considered the finest pitcher in the league, bar none. Turn of the century, nobody, you know, Christ. People don't even know who Bob Hope is. I mean, I guess I am getting old.
I know who Bob Hope is. I'm not that young.
So it was the most fun for me by far was getting to see Austin and getting to hang out with Austin. We really had fun, and he has turned out to be one hell of an interesting, smart, intense, fun guy. It was really, really cool. We went to dinner with Zachary, my appearance agent, and Walter, my wife Melanie, and Karen, Ashley.
Mm.
And it was great. I pitched to them at the time, but I'm kind of putting Goldar and me right now on a hiatus. I have to because of some things that have occurred with my work schedule, and I just don't have time to shoot these right now. But I pitched the idea I had to them at dinner. They absolutely loved it. So whenever we can shoot it, I'm going to try to include a lot more Rangers in this next one. And
nice.
Yeah, I'm not sure how we're going to make it work because shooting it it's a rather ambitious 7 pages. I'm a total fan of less is more, but to include 10 characters and give them all their just due, it's just not one of those, oh, do it. What is that Vine thing? Is that Vine thing still going around?
Yeah, Vine is still a thing. 6-second videos, which I don't understand.
I don't know. I've asked Kelly and Thomas, should I do some Goldar stuff on Vine? And they're saying no. It's not happening. So I'm not going to bother with that. Anyway, yeah, seeing Austin and spending time with Austin was my highlight, aside from meeting and seeing and getting to spend a little time with you.
Oh, thanks. I thought Saturday night was hilarious when you crashed our little room party. That was that was a trip.
Saturday night certainly did move into some interesting territory, didn't it?
Yep.
Yes.
right down to one of our newbies, and I guess wound up asleep in the fountain.
Wow.
Did you guys know that?
No, I did not know that.
Well, remember that young fellow with no shirt on?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the alcohol took a bit of a turn with that one.
After our room party wound down, of course, I went across the hall to the other party where I ran into you again, Kerrigan, as well as Austin. And
I was just going door to door. I just walked in.
I saw our friend out on the balcony, and he appeared to be just in tears, absolutely in tears, crying his eyes out.
Oh, my God. It went that far. Oh, my.
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't it like an almost existential, like, I don't.
It was. I guess he had been talking himself down, I guess, you know, what am I doing, this and that. And another fan or maybe I don't know. Brutal. But somebody was there trying to, like, talk him up with like one of those cheesy 80s movie pep talks where he's like, you're the man, you're legendary, and you need to remember that what you do, and kids look up to you, and this. And I was drunk, so I was just like, this guy's got a point. Yeah, hey, you are awesome, don't let yourself get down. So I'm running in this pep talk.
Oh my God, I missed that. I know there was an arrest attempt at a point with this gentleman. The cops actually came. Eric, I think you were standing right there when we heard this.
Yeah, we were. I mean, that happened outside of our balcony because it faced outside to the entrance of the hotel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and somebody saved him basically from getting arrested, whatever he was up to down there.
Wow.
And then it wound up that there was a call made to a certain party. Again, we were basically, I've gone home. He just called me. I think he's asleep in the fountain.
Oh, jeez.
And my certain party went down to try to help him out, and he jumped all over that party, saying, get away from me. You don't tell me what to do. And passed out again in the fountain. I guess he was a ranger from many generations down the line, right?
Fairly recently.
Yeah, he is a fairly recent.
That's all we'll allude to, but fairly recently.
I sure did envy his his build. I wish my stomach did.
God, I wish mine did too. Jeez. Yeah.
I think I made a joke actually right to him. I did. He was still in pretty good spirits at that time. I said, God damn it. Somebody introduced us. And I said, God damn it, dude. He'd had his shirt off. I said, I so fucking hate when people pluck somebody else's head on my body. Enjoyed that, but I guess that was probably the end of his enjoyment period.
Yeah, that was a bit rough. So overall, you enjoyed Power Morphicon?
I'm one of these curmudgeons that kicks and screams a week prior to going, and when I get there, I just totally have a ball. What's not to like, for God's sake? You know,
fun.
People are. I think the more of these that I do, the more incredible and almost surreal it is for me to realize how many people I affected in their childhood. That this was. We weren't going to work thinking about
the future about 20 years later.
Well, I mean, Karad, no, we wouldn't have even guessed that this was going to go on for 20 years. And the reason we went 3.5 years was, the reason we are the longest running one was because, you know, God forbid they start to become stars and want more money. So let's keep it to one year. You start, bye bye. He figured out the formula, and my hat's off to him. I'm hoping, I'm really hoping that they are doing a kick-ass reboot, and we all get to come back. I can't imagine we're not coming. You know, if they are doing a reboot of MMPR,
yeah.
Well, the obvious thing would be, you know, bringing in fresh new Rangers to play the exact same, you know, roles. Mm-hmm. And then why?
And the classic villains.
Well, why would we? There'd be no reason to replace us. That would not be smart. It would be bring them back. That's, you know, I mean, he tried to replace, you know, the last movie, and he saw that, you know, that didn't work. So yeah, I don't think he's going to make that mistake again. But I really hope the reboot, I hope that's what they're actually going to be doing.
Yeah.
Because I think that's a movie that if they have a good script, I'd love to get in on that. Dare I say, if the movie's good, this will change the makeup. Oh, yeah. All of these, this will be crazy. It'll be lovely.
Yeah, if this is anything like when Transformers rebooted in 2007, it's going to totally revitalize this franchise completely.
I don't see how it can't, because you're right. Going to get all the parents and all the kids of today are going to be hauled to that movie.
Oh, yeah.
And their parents, because they listen to it too, you know, forcibly.
Right. Well, and then the fans who grew up with it.
All the late 20s up to the 40-year-olds, but then your parents conceivably would go just to go, are you kidding me?
Well, you know what? My dad is a huge nerd like me. I mean, he collects toys, but he's, you know, a mechanic. He's a man's man, whatever. But he remembers taking me to the first Mighty Morphin Power Rangers movie, and he absolutely loved Ivan Ooze and the, like, where's my autograph book? And he still cracks up every time he even thinks about that. It's generational, this Power Rangers now.
No question. No question at all. And then you've got the rerun. I think we're probably still rerunning somewhere, right?
Oh, yeah.
I know we were for a period of time back some time ago.
Well, now with Netflix and the DVDs, it's everywhere. People can watch it anytime they want to, any season.
Well, there you go. We're never going to be out of
mind, yeah.
I don't think so. And these Morphicons, these Comic-Cons, seemingly are just becoming more prevalent.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
Zachary is going to one every weekend. Every weekend.
It's crazy, yeah. It's insane. Speaking of conventions, what's your next convention coming up?
I'm running up the line on 18th and 19th of October. I'm going to be doing a con called ZapCon, ZappCon. It's a small con that I'm kind of the headliner, it would appear, at least when you go to the page. I'm kind of the dude, which, by the way, Craig, the photographer that was at Morphicon, Craig Damon. Okay. Took a magnificent shot.
The one that they've been using of the preview image or the promotional images with Goldar in the back. Yeah, that's it's badass.
Yes, it's a beautiful shot, and I'm so glad we got it. I do have to credit Daniel for thinking of having him shoot that, and he was happy to shoot it. And it's actually going to be, I'm going to have it printed up as one of my pictures. I just think it's that good.
Nice.
So I feel very good about that. ZapCon, the only other ranger besides me would be Blake.
Blake Foster?
Blake Foster, whom I don't know. We've met. I believe we've met, but I guess I'll be getting to know over that week. I hear Blake is a bit of a partier, so we could get into trouble.
Always a possibility.
I try to steer clear of trouble.
Right.
Then I'm doing Pensacon in Florida.
Okay.
And I just looked up the dates on that about a half hour before you called me. And I'm looking at the thing going, what? February 27th to March 1st? 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 1. This is a 6-day event. And I'm going, what? This is crazy. Wait a minute. Something's wrong here. And I went back and forth with that for about 2 minutes. So I'm like, Garrigan, it's February. But I'm looking at this going completely spaced on the 28th. So it was very serious that it's right there in front of my face, 27 through March 1st. And I'm going, I can't do a 6 day. What are we going to do for 6 days?
And then in March.
March, we're going back.
To LexCon.
Hopefully they've figured out what scotch is at the hotel.
And I'm going to that one, so we'll be reunited.
Oh, fabulous. Well, I'll tell you, that was my biggest con by far. And quite frankly, beautifully organized. Everything worked there.
Oh, yeah.
It got pretty thick, though. There was a point on Saturday that it was like, holy crap.
Well, yeah, you said that you couldn't even move. You couldn't even get out of your booth.
I had to go out the backside, but getting into that wasn't even a thought. Not going to happen. I mean, I can't do it. I have claustrophobia. I think Matt, who is was working with Zach,
mm-hmm.
he hauled us up or hauled us back. I think Barbara and I did an announcement as Goldar and Rita for our photo op. For some reason, we had to come back through it.
Oh, and God. Matt
literally took us through like the president would be, you know, make a hole, make a hole, make a hole. And these poor people are making the hole, but it's like, no way they can make a hole. So they're pushing, you know, I mean, sardine. I felt so awful. At the same time, you better make a hole because I can't deal with this at all.
Yeah, I went to LexCon in 2013, so I missed the one that was earlier this year. But I'm all in for 2015. It's going to be huge.
Yeah, and there's a couple. We dined at a couple really good little restaurants. It's just a nice little town.
It's beautiful. You
know, yeah. And then, actually, we jumped one. This is not in stone, but I got an email asking my availability for Sacramento, which is called Wizard World Con.
Yeah, Wizard World.
January 19, 20, and 21. So
you know who does Wizard Worlds?
No.
Our green friend. Oh. Yeah, our green buddy.
Yeah.
He's contractually all over Wizard World. So
okay, we can roll with that.
Just throwing that out there.
This came in from about a week ago, and I told him I'm available, and I haven't heard anything back, but I didn't promote any of this. They came to me. So if I'm going to Zach Wizard World in January, great.
Cool.
I'll tell you, I'm a little – the flying part in these months, it frickin' creeps me out, but I'm sure as hell not going to drive.
No. That's not an option.
I don't think I'm taking a ship. So looks like I'll be flying, and hopefully Pensacon in that Florida's been getting freezing cold in these last couple of years, and that's right where they're getting these freezes. Pensacon is right on top of Mexico, right, or kind of the Gulf, or anyway, I'm sure it'll all be fabulous. I'm not going to worry about it. I can't worry about it because worry isn't going to work. What else should we say? You want to do that? Yeah, we talked about dinner. Yeah, anything else you got? Fire at will. God knows I've rambled on.
Zach, you got any?
Well, actually, it's kind of funny, you know, in your rambling, as you call it, you've actually answered a lot of the questions that Eric had written in the show notes. So I think we're okay as far as the show is concerned.
Yeah, we're pretty good, man. This is always a blast talking with you, Carrion. I'm so glad I got to meet you at Power Morphicon.
Absolutely, and I wanted to reiterate that it was so interesting being able to chat with you and hear your stories about Robards.
And we didn't much revisit that again, but yeah, what I meant to ask you, what how old were you and in what film was it?
I was 3 years old and the film was called Parenthood.
That's right. Yeah. You know, I think that's one of the only Jason movies I don't think I saw.
Yeah, it was weird. My aunt had come to my parents and said, Zachary, he's a cute kid. You should put him in movies. And so we went to a cattle call, something like probably in the area in Chicago, and they picked me out of something like 3,000 kids.
That's insane.
It is absolutely mind-boggling, and to this day, it still is. I kind of look back at it like, what happened for that to have happened? There had to have been the tiniest, slimmest chance for that to actually take place. But yeah, I worked with some amazing people.
The odds of landing that at 3 years old. Well, you know, my dad was a child actor.
Mm-hmm. I believe we talked about that as well, and I think I looked it up doing research for our previous interview.
Oh, you did, huh?
Yeah, I did. I like to be in the know and know a little bit about
He brushes up.
My dad was the same thing, you know, they were broke. up in Port Townsend, Washington, and my grandpa was out of work as a mailman, and my dad wrote the book, The Boy Who Looked Like Shirley Temple, and I've since written the screenplay that's called Screenland about that story. Well, the real story is my grandmother sent, my dad was cute, like your situation, right? I mean, mm-hmm. He was just a doll, and he sang on the radio up in Port Townsend, and so he'd already been introduced to this insane entertainment world. And my grandma sent a picture of him down to Daryl Zanuck. I think Daryl Zanuck, MGM, I think. And Zanuck wrote back and said, come on down. We can't promise you anything, but he certainly looks like somebody that could work down here in this business. And they hauled down to Los Angeles, not knowing anybody. He wound up auditioning and landed that serial that ran 5 years. It supported my grandparents, basically for 5 years through the Depression. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you work anymore, Zach?
I did a little bit. After Parenthood, there was a short-lived follow-up live-action television series of the same name where myself and one other child actor from the film were recast in the same roles. But in the TV show, it had people like Ed Begley Jr., William Wyndham.
Who was the director?
The director of the film?
Yeah.
Was Ron Howard.
No, I didn't, so I'm going to make a point of seeing it. Was it any good?
It's hilarious.
Okay. And Robards played the dad?
Robards played my grandfather. He played the father of Steve Martin's character.
Okay. And the series just lasted one season?
Yeah, series lasted 13 episodes, and then it was canceled. And the funny thing is, I was working my normal job at a theme park one summer a couple of years ago, and my buddy calls me up and says, hey, I'm working as an extra today. Guess what show? And I said, I don't know. I don't like guessing games. Just tell me. He goes, Parenthood. And I say, wait a minute. What the hell do you mean you're working on Parenthood? And he says, yeah, NBC has a reboot that's going to be a new series, and I'm an extra. And I said, what the fuck is going on in Hollywood?
Holy shit.
Yeah.
They're rebooting things left and right.
How old were you when you did the series? Did it follow directly, or was it a couple of years?
It was like I think a year after, so I was about four years old when we did the series.
So you know all about what I'm talking about with the matching and the tedium.
Oh, absolutely.
The tedium of shooting film.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
I can't even imagine with a child actor, though, because children have such short attention spans.
It's true. And there are certain laws in place that say if you are working with an actor who is, you know, this age, they can only be on set for this amount of time. Otherwise, it's considered cruelty or violates labor laws or something like that. So when they have a child in a scene, they have to film with that child, and then that child has to get out of there. And then that's it. They can film the reshoots.
You start messing with children and animals, and it starts to become a whole other element added mm-hmm. to the mess. But yeah, you know, matching yourself as a child. I mean, you know, you got to hopefully shoot that kid. He's not doing too much with props and crap.
Right. And I remember one of the episodes we had to do was an episode where my character went through the phase of wanting the prizes out of the cereal and not wanting to eat the cereal. So we filmed a scene where the actress playing my mother comes in and sees just tons of cereal all over the kitchen and calls out my name and Justin, and I come around the corner wearing just every piece of cereal prize, gaudy. I was wearing like the head bobby things and light up jewelry, and it was hilarious.
But some time for them to put all that crap on your outfit too, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah, it took time to set that up, and then to make sure that I didn't, you know, fiddle with it too much, that it would come off or not be in the right place for the next shot or what have you. And that's exactly what ties into what you were talking about with, you know, being able to match yourself, match the continuity and everything like that.
Oh yeah. Did you just probably had a line here, a line there at that age, I would think, right?
Yeah. For the film, less so. I mean, like for the film, there's a scene where the black sheep of the family, Steve Martin's brother, comes into town, and you know, I say, "Who's that?" And he goes, "My kid brother Larry, your uncle. Don't give him any money." And I say, "I won't." And it was just cute little, maybe one or two sentence lines that they had me read. And I only can, you know, verify this secondhand information, but apparently, at that age, I had no trouble being able to recite the line and have it memorized. So,
Well, I think when you're little like that, that all comes much easier. I mean, I remember my grandma worked for Frank McCarthy, who produced, I think I mentioned this in the last one, produced the film Patton. And yeah. I got to go to the Academy Awards at 16 years old and watch Patton win Best Picture. Talk about a highlight. That was pretty exciting. You know, we're rolling down the red carpet in my aunt's 68 Mustang, which is pretty new at the time. I think we won, I think, I actually just put the program in an envelope. I have the original 71, I believe, Patton won. So the Mustang was still pretty sharp looking, and I got to drive it. But here we were rolling down there, and all the people were screaming at everybody, and then this one and that one. And then you kind of hear this hush as our car comes in. It's like, who are they? They're not anybody. You don't want their autograph. There's nothing to do here. So, yeah, that was exciting. Wow. Couldn't believe it. Anyway, I was saying I was so taken with George C. Scott as an actor and me coming up as a young actor. So I guess I decided at whatever age I would have been in 71, 55, 65, 71, 16. So yeah, 16. I memorized the opening speech and actually came out in my, what at the time were called Chippewas, which were the boots you wore when you raced motocross. I mean, they were lace. They were lace boots in that year. There were not anything like what they're wearing today. And I raced motocross. You know, I was never much good. I was a midfielder every time. But I came out and did it for Frank, who was invited to dinner. And I came out and did the speech for him at 16 years old. Did it. I want you to remember, no bastard ever won a war by dying for his country. He won it by making the other poor, dumb bastard die for his country. Now... And I had it down, and when I memorized that thing, I was lying in bed with a flashlight, and I had the speech memorized before I went to sleep. I think I memorized it inside of about an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't do that today. I can hardly get through the lines in Govar and Me. Yeah, and when you're younger, I think you can memorize. I mean, I remember when I did plays in junior high school and high school. I had big roles. Memorized them with no problem. No problem at all. Now, boo. God.
Oh, yeah. Same thing with me. When I was doing plays and things in school, it was always easy for me, you know, enough to remember lines. And I recently did a film for a friend who was making his first independent feature, or not his first, but one of many, I guess.
Right.
And he said, you know, I want you to come down. I want you to play the bad guy. I said, absolutely. I've never played the bad guy. This will be fun. And it absolutely is. And just, he gave me the script and I was reading it over and I was trying to memorize these lines and, yeah, I was just like, wow, I'm really having problems. I can't focus nearly as much. And I'm, mind you, I'm going to be 30 in a year or so. And so it's like, man, I feel like I'm too young to be having these problems.
Well, yeah, you are. You're going to have a tough time at 60. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I know you, I didn't even mention the element of memorizing. It's another thing that people just don't realize. Boy, you got to really have those words down, because if you're reaching for lines, the camera sees it. The camera doesn't lie. You can't be in the zone if you're thinking, okay, here we go. What's the line coming? No matter how good you are, you... It shows.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, these Gold RMEs have kind of proven to me, quite frankly, I get a kick out of them to a point, and I'm happy with them for the most part, but I really don't think I'm a very good actor. I mean, a good actor behind the mic, I can get away with murder.
Yeah.
But I watch my face. I work too hard. I work too hard. But I do in life. I'm an animated character.
Yes. We know that firsthand now.
And sometimes I see stuff back and I just go, settle fucking down. Oh, geez. You watch the pros and, you know, realizing and seeing how incredibly seamless they are.
Yeah.
Just seamless performances that, and again, people don't realize you did this. Look at the edits. Look at how many setups there are. Every time they cut to it, it's like, oh, that's from that original shot. Well, that's a new angle. Well, there's a new angle. That's back to the one before. You can do it. But you can see how many setups. And those are the setups that they used.
Right. Not all the...
We're not even going to use that setup.
And that is what boggles my mind, because if you see such an amazing performance, that means they've done that amazing performance, like you said, 100 times.
Yeah, or in some case, I mean, in the cases of...
Right, or group. Like,
but,
50...
You're not going to get away with doing a scene, let's say a standard 3-minute scene.
Mm-hmm.
It's us. It's you and me.
Yeah.
And it's a fairly important scene. It's not the turning point, necessarily, but this is our scene. We're both stars. This is just a 2-man scene.
Yeah.
We're going to do a minimum, because we're stars. We're going to do a minimum of 5 setups.
Because you have to get his shot, their shot.
First, I got my master. We're getting a master, okay? We know we're getting an over-the-shoulder and the reverse of the over-the-shoulder. We know that.
Right.
Now, we're probably going to get 2 close-ups, not over-the-shoulders. Did we just say 5? We're done. Did you want one from the side in a profile? Line intentionally, because we're going to cut to a thing, we're going to cut to him looking this way. 6, 4, and let's go 4 takes. 25, 24, 24 nope. times you're doing that scene. And keeping the energy in the scene, right. Keeping the fluidity and the energy in every single setup. Because when we cut to you, even if we cut to your over the shoulder, in all fairness, he deserves your energy.
Yeah.
Even though we're on my shoulder, he's not over my he's looking at me. So it's not very fair for me to just kind of, I'll just walk through this one. Well, it's like that's not giving my fellow actor the energy he needs.
Because he's working off of your performance as well.
That's right. That's right. And I would expect nothing less from him. Now, I would vote for a rule. Screen Actors Guild should institute it.
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard it come up in any of the negotiations, but I don't like this, dare I say, bullshit when the regular on the TV show or the star,
yeah,
and Zach will know exactly what I'm speaking of, it's time for my medium close-up. I'm the day player, but I have the scene with the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the guy is now going to run off to his dressing room, and I am actually going to be looking at a stand-in who's not even saying the lines, the fucking assistant director or the continuity girl is saying the lines. Usually it'd be a second assistant. Well, okay. He's not an actor at all, and he's not even trying to be. In fact, his reading is probably horrible. And I don't think – do you agree with me, Zach? Shouldn't the actors have to remain for the other actors?
I think that, yeah, it's only fair. And have some common courtesy, some respect. We may not all be as famous as, let's say, a Clooney or a Keanu Reeves or whoever.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just damn decent of you to be able to provide that experience for your fellow actor, regardless of their level of famousness.
I agree. I just don't think it should be. I just don't think it should be allowed. It's like, this is the scene, and you're getting paid a hell of a lot more than he is. So
mm-hmm.
You're there to facilitate this scene in this show. So
now,
you won't be going off to your dressing room. We have a thing called lunch.
Now, is that a more recent trend, or is that has always been an issue?
Been going on since I was doing on camera, which goes back to 73, 74.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been...
If anything, it's probably gotten worse.
Yeah.
I never liked being a day player. It was a terribly awkward job.
Mm.
They're clicky. You're not treated very nicely by your fellow actors for the most part. I mean, the Alien Nation guys were great. The two leads were wonderful guys. I was never treated nicer, actually, by the actors. But boy, I mean, I did a thing called one season show, West Side Medical. And
okay.
It starred the dude that actually wound up writing the play on Golden Pond. Good for him. And he was a strapping, good looking blonde guy. And James Sloyan, who did the Lexus voiceover for Lexus for probably 12 years. And my agent, Don Pitts, at the time was his agent. And Sloyan was a nasty guy and wound up treating Don very poorly after Don had gotten him a $1 million contract when Sloyan finally decided that he was paying Don too much. Don got him where he was, and he left Don to get an attorney. T. to rep him at 5% instead of 10. Sweet, huh? I have no problems speaking nasty about him because I worked with him. And my job was an orderly in the show. I was an orderly that was reporting to the doctors in the locker room that their patient that they were about to do surgery on had not shown up. And the patient was the actor Clue Gulager. And I think he was having some kind of brain surgery. I think these two were brain surgeons or some horse shit. And Sloyan is so full of himself. He's flopping, you know, locker room has a lot of glass. So he's checking himself in the glass constantly. Oh,
God.
Yeah. And completely ignoring me. We have a scene together. Not even a hint of saying, hey, I'm Jim. Hi. Hey, hi, I'm Kerrigan Mahan. Nothing. Nothing. It's so awkward. Awkward. So
strange.
We do the scene and we run a rehearsal and I stick my head in and say my, you know, hey, guys, I'm sorry to report, but your guy, whatever, has not shown. What do you mean he hasn't shown? What are you talking about? What do you mean? What am I talking about? He hasn't shown up. That's what I'm telling you. There's no patient for you to do. So the director calls me aside after we shoot one. Dick Kynan. Dick Kynan. Great guy. And he puts his arm around me, just right out of a fucking movie itself, you know?
Yeah.
And he kind of walks me off just a little bit. He says, hey, what's going on out there between you and Jim? I said, what do you mean what's going on? He said, well, there seems to be a lot of tension between you two. I said, well, yeah, he's a fucking asshole. He never introduced himself. And I figure it works for the scene because he's an asshole in the scene too. So I'm giving him a little assholery back because he's an asshole. And Dick said, he is an asshole, and I love what you're doing. I hope James gets to hear this.
Well, you know, Kerrigan, we love what you're doing.
Thank you.
Just want to let you know it was just a pleasure meeting you finally in person at Paramorphicon, and I hope we hang out again at LexCon, man. That's going to be fun.
Yeah, they're all fun. They do all wind up being fun. This little one I'm going to, I don't know. It's his first one.
Some of those first year cons are amazing because even if not a lot of people show up, the people that do show up are pretty passionate about the people that are there.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. It's just a run up the line for me. I mean, it's 3 hours from my house to Fresno. No flying. I'll just drive on up, and they're actually paying me a nice appearance fee, which that's nice, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not just going in. I'm on my own selling pictures. So.
Yeah.
I do like a handler. I'm hoping I have a handler. I'm not crazy like at Morphicon. I want somebody in between. I don't like that part. I don't want to do the money. I don't like it.
Right.
Anyway, that's neither here nor there. I've always enjoyed doing these. I love doing these with you, Eric. Zach, it was great fun having a little further chat about your acting career. Are you going to stay with it?
You know, I really would like. I had thought about trying some voice acting, or at least maybe coming out with a demo and submitting it to the agencies here in Chicago to see if there's anything that I could do, even commercial voiceover work or something like that, just to kind of tide me over until I can figure out the live action situation again.
I would jump. I mean, there's nothing wrong with having a demo, but I'm going to tell you straight up, it has become so off the hook, saturated with all of these. You can look up after you sign off. I was just having a chat with Don Pitts the other day. And he said, go on to a thing called Studio Center. And I did. And it's just another incredibly well-done site with all kinds of voices. And they're all selling themselves for $1.99. And it's like, wow, this is brutal. I would jump into – you're in Chicago, right?
I am. Well, close enough to Chicago.
Well, my advice, not that you are asking.
Well, it's always welcome.
You've got some of the best theater in this country out there, and I'd get your ass into that Goodman Theater and start doing some plays and just get yourself out there so that you got some notoriety. That's when they're going to bite for the voiceover. I'd go after the on-camera with a vengeance, but you've got great – you know, you've got that other place that – what's that famous fucking place that
Second City?
No, Second City, yes, yes, but equally as who's the actor now that's bald and he's John Malkovich, the one that his theater that he started is out there. That's what I would do. If I was in Chicago, that's where I would be at. Gary Sinise came out of there too. You have an opportunity in Chicago to do it. That's what I would do.
Well, absolutely. I will definitely look into that then. And thank you very much for the advice, man.
The Steppenwolf?
Yes, sir. Steppenwolf, yes. Here's what I say, and then I'll sign off because I've got to eat something or I'm going to just tip over. I answer this question to these people at the panels very differently than everybody else does. Everybody else says, oh, you got to go and you do this and you study hard and you make your demo and you have to be ready. Oh, yeah, jack me off. Okay. Here's the deal. And I know this is a fact. If you have talent, cream does not always rise to the top. Bullshit. That's fallacy. I don't buy it. I don't buy it when people say, you know, you say your age, oh, it's only a number. No, it's not only a number. Because, you see, this number represents how much closer you're getting to this other number where most of us die. So I can't stand that bullshit. Here's the deal. You start swinging with the people. You find the people that are on the inside track.
Mm-hmm.
Who's hip and who's not. You get your ass in with the in crowd. If I had done that and I had opportunity, I would have become a pretty substantial actor, whether I like on camera or not. Yes, you're studying, but you're studying with the right teacher. You're studying with the teacher that has that crop. And that's the flavor of the month or the flavor of the year teacher, whoever that may be. In Los Angeles, it's Lyndon Chubbuck's wife. I can't think of her first name. Ivana, I think, Chubbuck or something. For whatever reason, she wound up being the guru. You want to be with the guru because the guru has the contacts, has the connections. Plus, you're meeting those people that are the happenings.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're going to do a play. Do a play where it counts. Do a play where they really go and see and they're scouting. That's where they go to the Odyssey Theater in Santa Monica. You go do a play at the Odyssey. You don't go do a play at the fucking cast down at the end of La Cienega, getting too close. Nobody's driving down there. It's not happening. So you're wasting, outside of getting chops, you want to do a combo play. You want to get your chops in the places that count. And you already have some chops, Zach. So, you know, you have no excuse. It's not like you're, oh, I'm not ready. You already kind of know what you're doing. So the sooner you can get in with those people, the better, because time isn't on your side.
A phrase I am starting to realize, yes.
It's horrible. I mean, I saw it happening and people were saying to me, my own people were saying, you're getting too old. That's when I was 28. Now they're grooming them. Look at this 12-year-old kid that they just eliminated off of, not American Idol. Not
America's Got Talent.
My God, that little 12-year-old dude, and he got voted off? Are you fucking kidding me? And that fucking gymnast stayed over him? This is who America, okay. But the point being, with these shows, the talent is coming out. The talent is being found. The talent is being seen. I'm thankful that I got my just due in the heyday of none of those fucking shows were on the air. I mean, I feel very fortunate. I'm not suggesting I'm untalented, but I see the competition and it's like, ooh, boo. So anyway, I've talked your fucking heads off.
You can talk it off for another 3 hours. I don't care, but
we love Kerrigan.
But I know you got to eat. I'm probably wasting away too. Kerrigan, it's always a pleasure to have you on. This is always great. It's always a fun time.
I don't know if we can do it anymore because I don't think I have anything left to say.
That's bullshit. We'll be interviewing you at LexCon. It's fine. Well, thank you so much, Kerrigan.
Thank you, Garrick. Thank you, Zach.
Thank you very, very much, Kerrigan.
I'll let you guys hang up because I don't know how to hang up this operation.
All right. Well, we'll see you later. See ya.
Bye, all.
You've been listening to the Ranger Command Power Hour, only on the Four-Eyed Radio Network. You can catch a new episode every other Saturday. Find us on the Morphing Grid at www.rangercommand.com. Follow us on Twitter at Ranger Command PH and like us on Facebook.com/Ranger Command Power Hour.
This has been another great presentation of the Four-Eyed Radio Network. You can catch more shows at foureyedradio.com.